Good, we finished.
So the program for tonight is maybe a little bit of education. So I think the stuff you already know, we're just going through it again. Centered around November 9th, 1732, the day of the founding of our congregation, the Most Holy Redeemer. And then after that, hopefully we'll just have a quieting prayer. And we'll turn off the lights, leave the little lights on, and have a healing. It's going to be a healing center. And I'm going to do that because of St. Alphonsus. You know, St. Alphonsus, when he was born in 1696, he was not a healthy baby. He was not a healthy man all his life. He was a small little man, and he had terrible bones that kept on pulling his whole frame over. He couldn't see very well. He had real terrible vision. He always wore these tiny glasses stuck on his eyes, and he had terrible asthma. And he almost died a couple times as a child with his asthma. And over the course of his work, he's a crazy worker. He just worked nonstop. He would always get sick. He'd worker, get really sick. Close to death. He would be anointed, and family would think he was going to die, and he would recover, and then he would be better, and then work. And because of that, he was used to, when he got sick not for a day or two. He got sick for 3 or 4 months that he needed to recover. And a lot of times he went down the coast, you know, as he did, to cleaner air, like we do, you come to Arizona, dry air. He went down the coast to a place where he could recover. Get better. So I thought, you know, in the spirit of all fathers, we could do a healing prayer, healing center, to kind of heal ourselves, or to center on someone else that would need the healing power of you this day. And we'll do that as our prayer. All right. So I'll say a few words as I talk about fathers now. I'm not a really good history person, so it's a lot of my own idea. I wrote a lot of it. It's all my own thoughts about it, too. If I'm not correct, you could certainly correct me or ask a question about it. What about this? But I brought some official books, so. So it's. I brought the one book that I would encourage all of you to read. It's a simple little book, Never Stop Walking. We talked about this initially. It's really a good book about just the history of the Redemptorists. And we just give a fun, short little thing, written by a sister. Sister Nancy Farrow and Immaculate Heart of Mary sister. As you know, the Immaculate Heart of Mary were founded by a Redemptorist, Father Gillette, in Monroe, Michigan. That's their headquarters.
And we have a few copies of that in the bookstore.
Yes. And you know what Monroe, Michigan is also known for? If you go to Monroe, Michigan, there's a huge stash right in the square there. You know what it's known for? Monroe, Michigan. Who was born in Monroe, Michigan? Custard. Custard's last stand. Ben Custard. Yeah, he was born in Monroe, Michigan. Take him on a horse. And in case I get in trouble, here's one. This is a two-volume work. This is History of the Congregation, Volume 1. So just easy reading.
Yeah.
Okay. Once I mentioned that Alphonsus, when he was born, was very sickly. They didn't know he was going to make it. And through his life, he had many bouts of sickness. And of course, he also, besides being physically ill a lot of times, he also suffered from extreme scrupulosity. He just, probably from his dad, because as you know, his dad had worked his way up to the ships to become the admiral of the Neapolitan Navy. And so his father was a very strict man, had slaves under him all the time, you know, on the boats, they had people board the boats. And so he was used to bossing people around and, you know, right and wrong, and whipping people and everything. Alphonsus grew up, his mother was very loving, so he got that whole love idea of her, but his father was tough, so he was always scrupulous, always struggling with, is this the right thing to do? Am I doing the wrong thing? Is God pleased with me? Am I a sinner? He struggled with that all his life, scrupulosity. That's why Redemptorists are known throughout the United States as priests that handle scrupulosity. In fact, our Father Tom Santa, who's the director here, is famously known throughout the United States as the person who knows the most about scrupulosity. You know, and scrupulosity in confession work is a person who will come to you day after day or week after week and confess the same sins and are worried that they are not forgiven or not forgiven. You know, all of that terrible affliction around it.
Father, it sounds like spiritual
OCD.
Yes, it's like OCD. It's OCD on a religious level. Instead of locking your door 10 times or washing your hands 50 times, you worry about sins. I'm a sinner. I think this sin is forgiven. It's not forgiven. I had a thought. I kept the thought 1 second too long. And I'm going to go to hell. So to go, you know. And Alfonso's was, all his life was terribly afflicted by scrupulosity.
Father Thomas got a book in the bookstore.
Yes, Tom has a lot of books in Scrupulosity. He's the they had a big article that mentioned his name in American Magazine last month, recognizing. So then, and as a famous expert on Scrupulosity, Father Thomas, as a title, Tom, you know, the famous expert on Scrupulosity. Which he did, we published a book on Scrupulosity, and we have a newsletter on Scrupulosity that comes out every month. It goes out to over 25,000 people. In the United States.
And there is a link to that site, to the Scrupulosity site, on our website. And you can read the newsletter too. But
the Scrupulosity. So he suffered, is that too cold? Or?
It's better
than the So he suffered from extreme scrupulosity besides being physically not a very healthy person. But he lived to be not almost 90, so God bless him. Now, I know. Go through some stuff quickly and then stop at points, okay? So the first thing, just to give a quick history, you know, he's born in 1696. He was a lawyer. He got a big law degree. He practiced law. And then in 1723, as a young lawyer, he lost a huge case. And it was a disgusting case. The judges either bribed or maybe Alfonso dismissed something, but they think it was a bribery case. And he got disgusted. And he took his sword, inside of his mobility, went to the Mary Shrine of Our Lady of Refuge, which was Our Lady of Ransom, which is his Madonna at that time. He placed it there and said, I'm done with the world. That's it. And he goes to the seminary. And right before he goes, his way into the seminary. And then, of course, after a month, he gets sick. Really sick. Almost, he had the last rites. They called, they anointed him. The parents thought he was going to die. They give a statue of Our Lady of Ransom to hold in bed, a prayer of Our Lady of Ransom to save him if he happens to die. He's holding Our Lady of Ransom, the statue. And he got better. He got better. And he went down, of course, to Milwaukee Coast to heal up. So he's very familiar with all that country, his place of getting healthy. So now in the seminary, of course, if any of you have been in a seminary, you know that it's just like college, you get your friends. You know, these are buddies. They're the same guys that are going through the class with you. You practice preaching together. You go out and do the little CCD things together. You know, that's what we do. And, of course, Alfonso's had best friends. He had best friends as a lawyer. And three of those best friends left the lawyer trade when he did around the time and also ended the seminary. So he had best friends. And he had a group of about six guys around him and himself. So you could call them the Magnificent Seven, if you want. The Magnificent Seven. And during the time of the seminary and at his ordination, they were a great group of guys. They went around Naples preaching. They were well known as famous preachers. They got involved taking over helping the Chinese college, which trained people who would be going overseas to China, to the Orient, to preach. They would train them to preach. And of course, they were involved with the evening chapels. They go to the poor areas, preach and organize the people. In fact, the government followed them because they thought they were inciting the poor people to riots. Because they were preaching to people around them, and then people would pray and light fires, bonfires, and so the government was kind of watching Alfonso. So he had quite the right reputation. And at that time, they got involved with the prostitutes of Naples. 30 to 40,000 prostitutes in Naples at the time of St. Alfonso. And so many of them ended up in the Hospital of the Incurables, which Alfonso and two or three of his friends, priest friends, worked at, in fact. One of his friends, Sarnelli, was a famous character who was the energizer bunny to Alfonso the Rock. And he was Alfonso's best friend, and he's the one who, I guess you could say, all his family saved the congregation at a little point later I'll mention. So anyway, and also they worked with street children. Alfonso and his group organized street children, tried to help them, tried to reach out and actually organize food for them and organized places that families that maybe take them. So Alfonso was well known, very famous as a young priest in Naples, as were his friends, the six other young priests that traveled with Alfonso. And these Great. So there was time for vacation. Where did they go? Down the Amalfi Coast. They get on their mules or take a boat down there at the Amalfi Coast, get off, spend a week in the mountains, walking and seeing the shepherds and everything. All of that. It was during this time of his early priesthood that Alphonsus made a personal vow not to waste a moment of time. And he tried to keep that vow of his life, so he wanted himself always to be working. But part of that was his scrupulosity. He thought it was a sin if you did nothing and just sat there or wasted time. So part of so he made this vow never to waste a moment. And of course, what happened?
He got sick,
exactly. So in his early years of priesthood, he got sick. He almost died again. He had to go down to the Amalfi Coast again, clean air, and some of his friends with him. And he got better. He goes to those places going better. And this is around, he's ordained in 1726 at the age of 30. And this is around from 1726 to 1730 is when all this activity in Naples was going on. He became this famous preacher in Naples. And then in 1730, the Magnificent Seven gave a missions all through that area of Scotland. They went down there in 1730, so he's been a priest now 4 years. And they gave a whole series of missions and retreats to nuns and the priests. And they were big in preaching, though, so they were all through that area giving the nuns and priests retreats. And, of course, they gave retreat in Scotland to there. And that is when Sister Maria Celeste revealed to Alphonsus her visions that he is to follow this religious order, and they have dressed all the priests in red, white, and blue. They've got a big red hat with white socks, purity of Christ, and blue mantle, red, white, and blue. And she revealed this vision to, first of all, this Bishop Falcoya, who got all excited with it. And then she eventually, in 1731, revealed the vision to Alphonsus, who would not accept it. He would not accept it. Okay, I'll read it to you. Okay. This is this one here. I'll just read it. Maria Celeste reveals this vision to Alphonsus that he is to found this religious order and dress up in red, white, and blue. This is what one of his friends was with him at the time. The seven are down there running around doing all this, and Alphonsus went into the confessional and she revealed this vision, and he was yelling at her and she was yelling at him. And then Mazzini, one of his friends, saw this mess and came to Alphonsus and said, he says, "I noticed that you were raising your voice in an unusual way in the confessional. You seem to be fighting with her. And then you entered the house and shut yourself in your room. I could hear you weeping. It was dinner, so I took the liberty of knocking on Alphonsus' door to see what was going on. He was in tears. I asked him, what are you distressed about? Perhaps it's an argument you've been having. If it has something to do with confessional, I don't need to know if it's under the seal, but can you tell me?" And he said, "Maria Celeste, the nun, says I must abandon Naples to found a new congregation at Scala to reach the country districts. Such, she tells me, is the will of God. This is beyond my strength. Besides, you know all my works in Naples, the missions I have partaken in, all the affairs I'm involved with. This is what troubles me. It crushes me with anxious fears. I cannot see my way to undertake this work." I tried to console my friend and arouse him from his depression. "Courage," I said. "Don't torment yourself. We don't know if this is the will of God. Let's wait." So you see, right after this vision, Alphonsus' scrupulosity kicked in. And there he was, struggling with this whole idea. How are you doing? Hanging in there with me?
We're hanging.
All right, so the Bishop Falcoya was also the bishop there, who Alphonsus knew very well, and Maria Celeste knew very well. Bishop Falcoya took the vision. Alphonsus said to Bishop Falcoya, "I can't deal with this. You tell me what to do, and I'll leave it in your hands." So after about 6-8 months, Falcoya and the other spiritual director told Alphonsus, "They think it's a true vision, you should found the congregation." So he's still Naples. He talks to his six buddies, the Magnificent Seven. He says, let's find this missionary effort, and we'll preach. We'll preach in Naples, we'll preach in the cities, we'll preach everywhere. We'll be a group of preachers. Well, they liked it. They're young priests. I mean, these guys are now 25, 20, Alfonso's 30, so he's older, but the other guys were getting ordained at 25, so he's 31, so, you know, they're excited about this. So they say, okay, let's go down to Scala, and we'll make a commitment together. And so they went down there, they were giving some retreats in the area, they come together on November 9th, 1732, but unfortunately, of the Alfonso's and the six others, only three of the others could make it. The other three went back to Naples because they had stuff to do. And so only three could make it for this commitment ceremony. So they had this commitment ceremony with the bishop saying the mass, Bishop Forcoia, and they sang the Te Deum, and they kind of made a commitment to be part of this preaching right now. And that was the end of it. Well, now they decided they're the Institute, the Congregation of the Most Holy Savior. It's formed. They had no rule, they had no place to live, but they like preaching. That's what they knew about. Okay, so now you have the end of the beginning. The other three guys come down about a week later, a week and a half later, and they start to meet. Let's plan a rule. Let's decide what we're going to do. And they could not, and Bishop Holcoy was there helping, they could not agree on anything. Some of them want to work in schools, some want to stay in the cities, some want to be in the country, like Alfonso's, stay in the country and work with the most abandoned people who haven't heard God. Others want to form a missionary band that, like the Chinese that go overseas. They worked for a whole week and a half. They couldn't decide. So they decided, what are we going to do? Let's go out and get a mission. So they went out and get a couple of missions. And as they did, the group slowly dissipated. And they all eventually left Alfonso's, went back to the city, except St. Alfonso's. And then a little bit after that, about 8 months after that, one lone brother, Vitus Curcio, shows up, who was a rascal. He had shot a doctor, he had stabbed another guy, he had run off from his town because he was going to go to prison, and shows up because he likes Alfonso's, he heard about Alfonso's, they heard that this great preacher is founding a new congregation, so he shows up, and Vitus becomes the rock of the early community. So the very birth of our congregation started in chaos. But the group still preached together. They still liked each other. Alfonso still went into Naples and preached, but he had no place to live yet. They had no place they had no rule. You had to have a rule. They had no rule. Bishop Falcoya, Alfonso said, you be in charge. Just tell me what to do, which was a mistake. Bishop Falcoya at that point was 70 years old. He's an old man. They thought he's not going to live another 10 years. So he did. And he kind of, every time Alfonso tried to write something, a little, of course, I don't like that. Let's do this. Let's do that. So it was kind of a mess for a long time. But as he preached the missions with this group of seven, himself, six and himself, they started attracting people. And Alfonso would tell about this new institute in the country he wants to have to preach to the country. So they started to join. And still didn't have a place to live. But then Sarnelli comes, a priest called Sal Sarnelli. And he comes, and he's from a very noble family. His father's a baron, very wealthy, owns a lot of land. He and his brother are priests. And Sarnelli was in a seminary with Alfonso. He was a lawyer when Alfonso was a lawyer. He worked with Alfonso in the incurables. And he was full-time with the prostitutes in Naples. That was his job. He wanted to get all the prostitutes out of prostitution. And he was, like Alfonso, he got sick once in a while, got really sick, had to go get recovered. So he decided to join Alfonso. And his family's very wealthy. So they said, we'll build a house for you. Come over to Chirano where our land is. So Alfonso, they came there, they gave him a big plot of land, and he built the first residence for, the first retreat house residence. All Alfonso's buildings in the country, he wanted like a shape of an L. At the end of the L would be chapel, then the priest, and then this would be the retreat center, like an L. And so that people could come on retreats, they could be in church, the priest could go back and forth and give retreats. And then, when they didn't have things going on, they could go out into the country. And so, in the beginnings of our order then, the big four, if you want to call them that, are Maria Celeste, her visions, Falcoia, who placed the authority, took over the power of the authority, Alfonso, who was the rock through it all, and Sarnelli, who was the energizer bunny, who kept pushing Alfonso to do more and get out of your depression and let's work at this. Now, they didn't have a rule. They had to have a rule to have an institute. How long do you think it took to have the first rule? Here's the rule. Here's the original rule that was we used it, and we're still using it. 1967, we're still using this rule. How long do you think it took them to make this rule, put it together, and get it approved?
20
years. Okay, so 1732, the rule was finally put together by 1749.
Oh,
so it took a long time and a lot of effort, and then it was finally approved. Let's see. You know, by virtue of the vow of poverty, the rule forbids us to use anything of silver and gold, both publicly and privately. If you have a walking stick, where it is used shall be very simple without any ornament. Umbrellas shall never be of silk or half silk. They may be kept by each one, even by a lay brother in his own room. The rooms shall have be small. Then they go through each picture, four pictures of the saints. And then how big the bed is, what kind of straw you're going to have in the bed. Or if you're sick, you can have special straw if you're sick. And this rule goes through every detail of life like that. Every detail of life.
To sleep in a straw bed?
Yeah, it's on a straw bed. Straw was the mattress of the day.
No, I'm asking you, do you?
Oh, yeah, so yeah, we have straw beds. I never looked, I don't think they are anymore.
Well, I can make you one.
So this is the original rule that was that still lasted from 1749 till I was still in the bishop back in the 60s. And then we had all religious orders had to get a new rule, which is called our constitutions and statutes. So this was, and this is the constitution and statutes. This has, oh my gosh, this has hundreds of pages and hundreds and hundreds, 400, 500, 600, well, 1,069, 1,680 different things to it. And this rule just has four chapters, very simple, and it doesn't have any of that detail of it. And this is called a constitution. So this is what we live by now. And the four chapters, the first one is the missionary work of the congregation. And it starts right off saying, you know, the most abandoned to whom in particular the congregation is sent are those for whom the church has not yet been able to provide sufficient means of salvation. Those who have never heard the church's message, or at least do not receive it as good news. And so there's four sections to this. One's on missionary work, the second one's on the community, third one's on the apostolic work of the community, and then formation of the community. That's real simple, as opposed to this complicated thing with the tiny little print. So, and I think Lee's going to give a little presentation on the constitutions and statutes.
That's a lot. I ran out of time. Sorry about that.
Yeah, and it's really an amazing work that really does work for the order. So it's very interesting to hear about it.
Father Paul?
Yes.
Did the Pope have to, in some way or form, get involved and give his assent to the creation of this new order?
To the rule, yes. Mm-hmm. But that was a big battle because the two kingdoms of that time were the kingdom of the Papal States and the kingdom of Naples. Mm-hmm. So the kingdom of Naples didn't want the religious order to be established by Rome. And so when Rome approved the order, we had to have a house in Rome. And so the King of Naples said, cut off, said, well, that's your religious order there. This, my religious order here is this one. And it's different than that one. And here's the other rule that's down here. So they changed the rule. And for a while, there are two separate Redemptorist religious orders in Italy. And they had to, and they finally, after the king died, they reconciled the rule. But for a while, Alphonsus was out, picked out his own religious order. Because he lived in the Naples area. And the only recognized one by Rome was in this rule in Rome. So it's kind of a lot of politics because the king ruled the roost of the king of Naples and everything had to be under him, and of course Rome wanted them to honor them. So November 9th coming up, where is our official founding. And this will obviously leave with this one thing. It says here, Alphonsus wanted the Institute of the Most Holy Savior to have no other goal than the sanctification of the clergy and the well-bred people by retreats in the houses and the sanctification of the abandoned people who live in the out-of-the-way places and villages by means of missions. Therefore, he wanted the houses in the midst of poor country people.
Amen.
That was it. Okay. Well, we have 5 minutes left.
Let's just use the 5 minutes just for a little bit of feedback and discussion. And was there a part of the whole story that you heard? What part did you connect with? Some part or some person that you connected with?
I was thinking that, you know, when you said they were great preachers, well, they probably had been preaching when they were doing their law cases, so of course they would have been better than just the common, you know.
Yeah.
That was part of their education.
Right. They have to be very verbal about what they present. So what's your story? You're not a lawyer.
No, I'm not. I'm not a canon. We don't have too many canon lawyers in our room.
I love that, though. Maria's blessed to have the vision, that a woman had the vision.
Yeah, without her, she's the star. She's the one who begins it.
Yeah, and really, when you hear the whole story, you can't think of Alphonsus without thinking of her.
Yeah.
She even tried to dress them.
Oh, yeah, and she kept getting thrown out of different places because she was seen as a kind of a mystic, crazy woman in Naples.
They were friends growing up, weren't they?
Yeah, not growing up. I don't think they knew each other through the retreats because he'd go down there a lot.
But she never gave up, even though there was just constant negativity around her. She never gave up on that vision, and then. Then the men caught it.
Yes. Alphonsus caught it, and then Poya was a bishop and gave the authority to it. So you had the big four, Celeste, Poya, Alphonsus, and Cenari.
So are they all saints, all four of them?
Yes. Now, all those, he's a blessed, she's a blessing.
Cenari's
a blessing. She was just made a saint. Well, no, she was just made a blessing. Right? When we were over there, was it a saint or a blessing?
Blessed.
She was made a blessed. Pacoria, no, he never was made anything. He was 70 at that time, kind of just dissipated, and that was it. And it was possibly made a saint. Yeah, so
you know what part I connected with, and I bet you did. He just didn't say it, is that part when Alphonsus with three other people made the commitment, because you're on the brink of making a commitment. We have the constitutions next time, and then we have the two meetings in December where we're going to help you form that and kind of understand about that commitment part. So every time I hear that part of the story, it makes me think of us continuing that part of the story and continuing. I think Alphonsus is probably smiling, don't you think so? Mm-hmm. We started something.
I think one of the things that always strikes me about any of the saints or anybody that starts an order is the difficulties that they have to go through. Mm-hmm. And the perseverance, and they don't quit. And I think that's probably a really good virtue to be looking at, is not to quit. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's so many of them, it's always fraught with difficulty. It's actually a wonderful thing, isn't it? A wonderful virtue, really, in itself.
And just on that point, Alphonsus the congregation was founded in 1732, and everybody eventually left, except Vitus showed up, the brother. So Easter 1733, he was so down and out that he took a vow of perseverance, that he would stay in religious order no matter what. He was never going to let go of this religious order, even though him and Vitus were the only two involved. But of course, he's still giving missions with all these other guys. And eventually, a group of them, three or four of those ones that said no at the beginning, eventually joined him in the effort. And his dad had joined him in the effort.
Yes.
The dad eventually came. There was a terrible breakup in the family because of the firstborn. But the dad eventually called and asked if he could come and be a brother in his group. Mm-hmm. And of course, the boss says, absolutely not.
His dad just begged him not to leave and do that. And so what did he do? Early in the morning, late at night, he snuck away with his spiritual director on their donkeys and left town and started his mission.
They said that the great preacher has left the city on a donkey. It was like an insult, instead of taking the great boat.
In those days, to leave your family was really big.
Because of the difficulty, it led to you having a vow of perseverance.
Yeah, we take...
So that basically...
We still take it. We take the three vows, yes. Body, chest, and obedience. Then we take the oath and vow of perseverance. Our guys that were here a couple weeks ago, the two that made vows, also did the oath of perseverance.
Anybody else want to mention something that you connected with?
The 70 is old.
Oh, I'm 72. But the thing is, Alphonsus gave all his power over to Falcori. He said, you take care of it, you tell us what to do. But Alphonsus wanted to write the rule. He didn't like Falcori writing the rule, because Falcori kept adding stuff he wanted, which was not part of Alphonsus' vision. Falcori wanted to work in schools and all kinds of things. And so they thought, well, he's not going to live that much longer. He lived a good 8, 9, 10 years. So when he finally passed, then Alphonsus himself took over and wrote the rule and really led the charge at that point.